Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Ion Travel with Peter Greenberg, that's me, ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's Byte.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
This is the Ion Travel Podcast with CBS News travel editor Peter Greenberg.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Ion Travel Podcast. This week, from the Montage Palmetto Bluff Hotel and Resort in Bluffton, South Carolina, I'll speak with Scott McCartney, travel editor emeritus of the Wall Street Journal, about a strange development in the airline business. At a time when airfares were nearing historic highs and every plane was full, some of the low-cost carriers were getting hammered on profits. He'll explain what happened and what that means to you. Next, we'll dive deep into the Lowcountry of South Carolina, first with the mayor of Bluffton, Lisa Sulca, and then with historian Glenn Umberger, with lots of surprises. First up, Scott McCartney.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe, now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient, comfortable. Ah.
The notorious Scott McCartney. How are you, sir?
Notorious SM. I'm good, Peter. How are you?
I'm good. You know, it's interesting to talk to you always, but especially when you're trying to figure out how you crunch the numbers. You know, this has been a quarter, or actually a year, in which the airlines have made a lot of money. They're rolling in it. Every plane is full. And they're predicting, if you listen to their analysts' meetings, the CEO of Delta's predicting even more money and even doing better. And yet, interesting report now from Spirit and Frontier that says at least in this quarter, they might not be making that much money at all.
I know this is fascinating. So you have full planes, you have crowded airports and all that, and you think airlines would be printing money, and yet Spirit and Frontier are both going to lose money, and insignificant money. Spirit, which said their margin is going to be around negative 15%. So every dollar they take in, they lose 15 cents. It's really remarkable. Frontier really flipping their projection from an estimated revenue increase of 4 to 7% to an expected loss of 4 to 7%.
Okay, so how do you explain this?
Well, I think it's a combination of things. I do think demand has declined this fall, and it started in August. And so the big airlines, which have seen really a surge in international travel, have benefited from that, even as domestic travel got weaker. But for Spirit and Frontier, they're so heavily domestic travel, and this carries over to Southwest some too, that's tougher for them. I also think that higher fuel prices have taken a huge toll on these guys, and higher labor costs. It's interesting, you know, Spirit, we've seen huge labor contracts at American, Delta, and United, but Spirit also signed a new labor contract with the Airline Pilots Association, which really upped their wages, and Frontier's going to have to do it too. And they're all paying more to hire pilots, to hire ground workers, to hire everyone else. It's interesting. Scott Kirby, the CEO of United Airlines, had a while ago said he thinks that the low-cost carriers are really going to be in trouble. And maybe we're starting to see that there was some truth in Scott Kirby's prediction. Now, this all may be seasonal. They'll do fine next summer and all that, but it is an interesting trend that you're seeing good earnings at big airlines and not so good earnings, and in fact, losses at smaller airlines.
And at the same time, we're at a time of the year when fares tend to drop.
Yeah, and fares have dropped, and that's, you know, that's not good for airlines, right? Their costs don't necessarily drop when their fares drop. You know, everybody thinks airlines can just raise fares, but they can't. They can try and raise fares, but if demand has come down, people aren't going to go, or they're going to go somewhere else, or they're going to go shop around until they find a cheaper ticket. So the lack of demand this fall has forced airlines to cut fares, and that's hurting the weakest guy.
Indeed. And of course, what hasn't also been discussed, at least recently, is the pending, you want to call it a merger or a takeover of Spirit by JetBlue.
Yeah. And I think, you know, in some ways, Peter, this kind of makes the case for, makes a case stronger for the merger. Spirit's losing money and JetBlue may, you know, we're going to see JetBlue have lower earnings. The JetBlue argument is we will be stronger as a bigger airline, and I think we may be seeing some of that. You know, there's another interesting aspect to airline finances right now. The big guys are making most of their profit off their frequent flyer program and their credit card deals, and these little guys don't have giant deals with American Express or Citibank. So they don't have that bonus in their earnings that big airlines have, and that's hurting them too.
Exactly. But interestingly enough, though, you talk about the frequent flyer programs, even there may be a dent in that, with a lot of people reacting in a very negative way to the Delta announcement recently about how they were revamping their frequent flyer program, not to mention their lounge access, because, you know, they're co-branded with American Express on their credit cards. And a lot of people who are angry American Express card holders are threatening to cancel their cards.
Yeah, it was on the podcast, we were sort of making fun that, you know, there's been so much attention on Taylor Swift and Travis Kelce. And it was sort of like, well, Ed Bastian wanted to go back to December again. He tried to tell frequent flyers to shake it off, but they just wouldn't. It really, you know, in the annals of business blunders, this may be another one, right? So Delta did what largely what American had already done without a whole lot of angst. But I think, you know, it's different with Delta. And so they said they were going to switch to elite qualification totally based on money. Not miles or trips flown, and they're doing other things like tightening up and limiting access to their lounges. Well, they have a huge overcrowding problem with their lounges, right? So they got to do something, and they have a huge overcrowding problem in their elite ranks, and that affects everything from crowding at boarding to access to upgrades and better seats and just general happiness with the program. And then the backlash came from people who would be downgraded, essentially. And you can understand that. But the airline responded by saying, "Oops, we did it again. We made a mistake. We're gonna reevaluate and roll back." I think this is probably a case of these are changes Delta's gonna need to get to, and so instead of sort of doing it all in one fell swoop, they're now gonna say, "Oh, we'll do a little bit this year to make you happy. But then we'll do a little bit more next year and the year after and the year after, and eventually we'll get to the same place."
Well, yeah, that's the point. When Ed Bastian said, we may have gone a little too far, he didn't apologize and he didn't say, "I'm sorry." He didn't say it was a bad move. What he was really saying is, "We never should have done it all at once, but we're still going to do it." I mean, that's really what's going to happen here. And a lot of people, I mean, this decision by Delta or the announcement by Delta gave a lot of frequent flyers the opportunity that they didn't really have before or didn't seize before to do the math and connect the dots and now begin to question the value of their participation in the frequent flyer program, the value of the mileage that they're spending so much time chasing. And I can tell you, I've gotten so many emails from our listeners saying, "I'm going to a cashback credit card. I don't need to chase miles anymore. It's not worth it to me. I'll never get the upgrade anyway. Why do I spend $700 a year for lounge access for a lounge I can't get into?" And that's something that whether Delta wants to make changes or not, along the lines of what they wanted to do, that may not be solved.
Yeah, no, and that is the fundamental problem, right? Because that credit card is everything to Delta. It's all the profits right now. And so they got to keep the credit card people happy. And they thought they were going to do that by allowing more elite qualification from your credit card spend so that you would use that credit card more. But if you say, "Forget it, I'm going to a cash back credit card," then Delta loses, American Express loses, or American Express may not lose if it goes to a different credit card at American Express. But certainly Delta loses.
And the interesting thing, Scott, is that when you actually look at the attitude of the travelers who were blowing back on this, the perception was in order to get the lowest tier status at Delta, you'd have to spend a minimum of $75,000 on your American Express card. If you wanted the highest tier status, you had to spend $350,000. That came as a shock. And people were saying, that's it, I'm out of here.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's right. That's right. You can get a companion pass at Southwest Airlines for spending, $115,000 or something close to that.
Amazing.
And that's a good benefit that if you travel a lot, could put hundreds of dollars of savings in your pocket, essentially.
You know, the other day when the government was on the verge of being shut down, Secretary of Transportation Pete Buttigieg made an announcement saying, "You know, if we shut down, we're going to have to stop training all those new 1,600 air traffic controllers we just hired, and we don't want that to happen." Well, the good news was the government didn't shut down and the training is continuing, but that doesn't mean that those 1,600 new hires are working the boards. They're not. In fact, it may be even more problematic than that. We've been talking to Scott McCartney, the travel editor emeritus of the Wall Street Journal. Scott, interpret the latest Inspector General report on air traffic control.
It's shocking, Peter. It really, really is. And, you know, if this was potholes in the street or bridges falling down, things you could see, there would be national outrage, but you can't really see all the potholes in the sky and all the problems. You don't know that your flight to New York was delayed because there weren't any supervisors in the New York Terminal Control Center. But the Inspector General's report showed just a sort of a horrifying staffing level. 75% of the FAA's critical facilities, top 30, 25 facilities, they're below 85% staffing level, and that's bad when most every place is up. But the New York TRACON, the Terminal Area Traffic Control Center, controls all the flights in and out of the New York area. They have 8 supervisors. They're supposed to have 30. The staffing level at that facility, arguably the most important in the country, the staffing level there is only 54%. The FAA has tried to address this some way by moving the airspace over Newark, New Jersey to the Philadelphia TRACON, which actually has fairly decent staffing. And Senator Chuck Schumer basically blocked it, said you can't move jobs out of New York. So it's a huge problem. I recently talked to Steve Dixon, the most recent FAA administrator who resigned a bit ago. And, you know, it is a fundamental infrastructure problem that's getting worse, that even with the people being trained, you know, we have known this was coming for decades, and the crisis is here. And it's affecting travel every day. It's made prices higher to get in and out of New York because airlines have had to cancel flights through the fall, summer and fall, because the FAA knew it just didn't have enough controllers.
And not only that, Scott, I've been on three flights this week that were basically delayed simply because of what we call flow control. That's air traffic control again, yeah. Slowing it down.
Yeah. No, that's right. And there are controllers called traffic management controllers, and they make sure that the flow is right, so you don't end up with a particular chunk of airspace getting overloaded with too many planes, or a particular airport getting overloaded with too many planes arriving at the same time. They're really crucial to the system, and there's a huge shortage of them. So if you don't have enough traffic management controllers, you just have to close down sections of airspace. So, I was in Baltimore, sat on an airplane. There was a little tiny thunderstorm, and it happened to be on a route that Baltimore departures use for westbound. And there was just no ability in the system to allow planes to reroute. There was no reason in the world why every airplane westbound couldn't fly around that thunderstorm, except that meant those planes would go into another section of airspace and you would overload that airspace, and there just weren't enough controllers to make it happen. So what does the FAA do? They just keep airplanes on the ground.
And worse than that, we have air traffic control centers where you have air traffic controllers working overtime.
Yeah, huge overtime. I mean, that's really the issue in the New York center. They have a hard time. The washout rate is really high there. And you could cynically say, hey, the controllers there that are getting huge amounts of overtime, they don't want more people in that center because then it's going to cut down on their overtime. I think this is, you know, this is a national economic issue. This isn't an issue for the 8 or 12 controllers who are really enjoying heavy duty overtime. It's just something that has got to change.
Well, it's a systemic problem. And as you said, there's no news bulletin here. This has been brewing for at least three decades that I know of. And, you know, if there are a couple of jobs that you do not want anybody working overtime, let me see what they might be. Brain surgeon, heart surgeon, and air traffic controller. Come on.
And it's serious because the controllers say, hey, there's a lot of burnout. There's a lot of fatigue here because we are working so hard. It was crazy that the FAA shut down its training academy for 2 years in the pandemic. Just absolutely
amazing.
No reason.
My thanks to Scott. Now imagine a town that started small, I mean really small, at just one square mile, and then exploded to 54 square miles. In 1992, Bluffton had just 742 residents. Today, more than 30,000. And Bluffton has still managed to keep it small. Mayor Lisa Sulca explains the town's philosophy.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Madam Mayor, welcome.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
For the folks listening right now, can you explain Bluffton? Paint the picture.
Oh my gosh, I could just talk all day. You know, it is...
Because you've been here for 30 years.
Yes. It is everything you'd want in a small town, everything you'd want in a city, but you get it in a small town with that community feel. But we have the river, we have the weather, we have the people, whether they were born here or moved here from another part of the world, that just drink our Kool-Aid and understand the importance of welcoming people who come here for the first time. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, but you're from South Carolina.
I am from South Carolina. So I like everywhere in South Carolina, but I am from South Carolina.
And you went to a school that has a terrible football team. What's the name of that school?
Hey, we're on an upward trajectory to greatness.
By the way, my Wisconsin Badgers have been on an upward trajectory to greatness for 40 years. They're not there yet.
Well, my blood is way too orange.
Yeah, we know.
It's very orange.
We got it.
Go Tigers.
I know, go
have
Tigers.
Have to do it.
Do you have a shirt?
Oh, I have all kinds of orange.
But people don't realize, I don't think, that where we are right now is really on the coast.
Right, right. People didn't know what Bluffton meant for years. And now it's just wonderful in a place we sit today at Palmetto Bluff. They market Bluffton, and really this community has put our town on the map. We're right on the coast. We have river all around us. We're 54% water, our county. So we have a lot of water around where I live. And the environment, the trees, the birds, the dolphins, the gators. I mean, just every day you walk down the street and you smile.
When I checked into my room today, there was a little pamphlet there. It says, Understanding Alligators.
Yes, sir.
So you want to explain to me what you just meant by, oh, they're gators. What
yes.
do you mean?
Well, you have to be aware of the environment anywhere you go. But
are there alligator crossings?
There are. No. They cross wherever they want to.
We figured that out.
There are alligators. People think they can, you know, just like the buffalo at Yellowstone, they think it's cute. They can get a picture. They can feed them. But, you know, you're doing more harm than good. And you have to respect and appreciate where they are from about 50 yards distance, and no, they're never going anywhere. They have outlived everything. They were here before the dinosaurs, I think.
And they're here in large numbers.
Big numbers, and they're big.
But do they understand that there's a hotel here?
I think some do, because I don't seem to see many when I'm here at the hotel.
They're in the spa. They're in the spa.
That's exactly right.
When people come here for the first time, and I'm talking to Bluffton, not the mm-hmm. hotel, what's the surprise for them?
I think the surprise is they come into a town that every storefront is full. The restaurants are amazing. The ability to walk from north to south, and south ends in the May River, is just different for so many people and where they come from. And for the most part, our weather is fabulous. It's hot in the summer, but it's a very walkable town, and the people are just so friendly, you know, and we want people to stop and ask us, you know, where something is so we can introduce ourselves to them.
Is it true that Bluffton started just as 1 square mile?
One square mile. We have a street that is our main street, and
tell me it's called Main Street.
No, we don't have a main street.
Thank you.
No, we don't. We don't ever want a main street, but the street that is our busy street, there is a center part of it, a half a mile to the river, a half a mile north, east, and west. And that was the central, center point of Bluffton when they incorporated in the 1800s. And we were a square mile until the 90s. When I moved here, we were still a square mile.
And today?
Today, we're 54 square miles.
Whoa, that's exponential growth.
A lot of growth. A lot of growth.
And how do you manage that growth?
Well, you know, we hire very well. And you need people who run the town to be knowledgeable of how to do, you know, smart growth. And you need a council and mayor. I think that understood where we were to know where we're going. When I moved here, I was number 742, and I jokingly say that, but seriously say it. There were about 740 residents when I moved in 92, and now we have almost 30,000.
Whoa.
So I grew up, the town grew up, and I grew up along with it.
And you've been mayor, you're the longest serving mayor in the history of the town.
Yes, yes.
So they haven't found out yet. But in any given day, you can bike all 54 mm-hmm. acres, right? Mm-hmm. Or 54 square miles.
Mm-hmm. You can. We have pathways that are beside every roadway. So from one end of the 50 square miles to the other, from the north to the river, you know, you get to the river, you have to start swimming. You can bike, you can walk.
So your infrastructure was not added as like an afterthought?
No, it's very well thought out, very well.
What makes your town a smart town?
You know, you can come across different answers to that, but I think we're smart because we provided the smart growth. Whenever we developed an area, they had to provide either amenities to the residents or they had to provide funds to go into some fund for schools, for roads, for pathways, for parks. Palmetto Bluff, they develop, but we have a public dock. You can come through the gate at any time and enjoy lunch or enjoy the river. The river,
so you're making it accessible.
We make it very accessible because not many people in the 54 square miles have that access to water. And our river is really, really important to this town. It's the livelihood for a lot of people who shuck oysters, shrimp, crab. And for those, like I would explain to someone, if you want to do something fun, get on the river and kayak. So it's a really important part of our town.
Well, speaking of the river, obviously when you have this kind of growth, you have to worry about water.
You do.
Do you have enough water?
Yes. Well, we have a private utility that provides us water through the aquifers. Sewer was a big issue as we were growing. So with these developments, they had to provide that for their residents, so it wasn't a cost to the town. The water is from a private utility. You know, we had to think about every need that this 35 to 40,000 population may need. Schools, healthcare.
So when you came here, how many schools were there?
There was one of everything when I came to this town in 1992, except churches. We had 20 churches and one police officer.
Hold on. You had 742 people in town and 20 churches?
We had 10 churches in our square mile.
How big were the congregations?
Well, divided by seven.
Intimate.
Yeah, we were tight-knit.
Wow.
Yeah.
How many different denominations?
Every denomination. And you were asking more about Bluffton. We're in this most southern part of our state. And we are so diverse in our religion, in our people, in what we offer. I mean, it's just amazing. We have every religion you can name. We have, within 15 minutes, you have a congregation.
Wow. So basically, if you really want to go crazy, do it on Sunday because everybody's in church.
That's right. That's right. Most everybody. The other half's on the river.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
They're praying.
The real church of God.
They're praying in the kayaks.
That's right.
Yeah, okay. The real church. Right. Of course. But he's with everybody everywhere. So
hey.
There you go. What's the biggest challenge you have?
You know, educating new people that don't realize this was such a small town of 742 people not that long ago, and really educating them that they're not the last people to move here. We're still a growing town. So, you know, we're about 70% built out residentially, so we have 30% more of our growth that's
that
planned.
That you can accommodate.
That we can accommodate.
But when you moved here, you said there was one of everything, like one mm-hmm. restaurant.
Squat and Gobble. I can name
ones. Whoa, whoa. What's the name of that restaurant?
There was only one restaurant in town, and it was called the Squat Inn Gobble. Squat and Gobble.
Is it still here?
It is still the best breakfast spot in town.
Why?
It's just your typical small town diner, but they have a line now to get in, so you have to pick and choose the times to go. You can't just walk in and sit anymore. You have to wait.
Unless you know somebody who knows somebody.
You kind of blink, but then they want you outside waiting because they don't want to. They don't want the peer pressure.
And what do you order there?
I always get the same. I do breakfast. They're open for breakfast and lunch, and I get your basic grits, eggs, bacon.
Well, there's no such thing as basic grits.
They're good grits.
Are they?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. No. Basic grits.
So basically, you're a grit inspector.
I am a grit inspector. And I can do that. I'm from South Carolina.
Yes, you can. What about lunch?
Lunch, any food truck, that's one thing with our growth. We've seen the uprise of food trucks, and they're all great. I would pick the Cottage. Cottage right there in our main street called Calhoun Street. Just unbelievable old house with a wraparound porch, and they serve anything from shrimp and grits.
Well, we're back to grits.
Back to grits, to salads, to fabulous sandwiches. Just wonderful.
And dinner?
Dinner. I'm going to have a lot of angry business
Don't
owners.
Don't be the mayor, be you.
I am. Farm Bluffton. It is by far my favorite place that just opened in the last 10 years. He's a Baird Foundation winner.
Oh, James Beard Foundation.
James Beard. He is farm to table. True farm to table, from your cocktail to your dessert.
Wow, so if I can get through the name Squat and Gobble.
I'll meet you there.
My thanks to Lisa. There's a lot of history in Bluffton, including the fact that it was burned down during the Civil War. And the stories are still being told by folks like historian Glenn Umberger. Glenn Umberger, welcome back.
Thank you, sir.
So, when I was talking to the mayor earlier, she was telling me, you know, this town started with like, you know, 1 acre or 1 square mile.
1 square mile.
And now it's like 54 square miles.
54 square miles, yes.
But when it started with 1 square mile, dating back to the 1700s, what was here?
Not much.
Okay.
So around 1825, 1830, area planters were building their summer cottages on a bluff overlooking the May River. They discovered the river, mainly because of the better climate during the summer months and to get away from pests and bad weather over the summer on their plantations.
That's also when you got the first post office, right?
We got our first post office in 1839 before we even were called Bluffton. In 1839, in May, we got our first post office. We were called May River, South Carolina, because that's where we were located.
That's where the boat stopped.
That's exactly right. So with the summer cottages, we were pretty much a sleepy town for the most of the year, a little bit busy during the summer months, and that's all that was happening here.
Then came the Civil War.
Yes, in particular, Thursday, June 4th, 1863, Union troops came over from Hilton Head, ransacked the town, burned the town. We lost about 60% of our homes and businesses in one day. Fortunately for us, a few of those structures still survive today.
How many people were living here then when they burned it?
Not even a couple hundred.
Wow. So it's really had to turn completely around.
Yes.
And it took about 150 years to do it, just about.
Yes, and especially after the war, most of the properties that were owned by formerly wealthy planters, who are now destitute, went on the auction block. So the local sheriff was very busy with sheriff sales in town, selling off all these parcels of property and the houses that remained after the war, and then empty lots.
So it was a buyer's market.
It was a buyer's market, especially if you had money and you were from the north.
And that's who came down?
That's who came down.
Sort of like what just happened during the pandemic.
Pretty much, yes.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Everybody from the north said, okay, I'm going down.
That's right.
It was either Florida or South Carolina.
That's right.
Amazing. But then came World War II.
Then came World War II. We were pretty small up until the 1950s. I believe the 1950s census has us listed as having a grand total of 356 residents. I think it might have been a little bit more than that.
So this is Mayberry RFD.
It is. We did not have a traffic light. We had most of our income being generated by the speed traps on the road.
Oh, you were the guys.
We were the guys,
so this is the original My Cousin Vinny.
Pretty much, yeah.
So the sheriff basically was pulling stuff.
Well, I don't know about pulling stuff. But,
well, speed traps.
Yes, that's
that
right.
Would be called pulling stuff.
That would be calling that, yes.
Yeah. That's a historical term.
Sure.
Yeah, okay, fine. So that was the revenue, basically. You're going to be here a while unless you contribute to the budget.
That's right.
Okay, but then what happened?
So up until 1960s, 1970s, we're still pretty quiet. 1965, we get a brand new post office. At that point, we have about 500 residents in town.
But then it's called Bluffton then?
It's called Bluffton. We got called Bluffton officially in 1841. So we've had that name since 1841.
All right, so now you got a new post office. Big deal.
Very big deal. And we've moved into the modern age. Still,
how many traffic lights?
Zero traffic lights.
Wow.
Then there was a small development that happened out in the far western area of town called Sun City by Del Webb.
Oh, you know, I remember those in Arizona.
Yes. So Del Webb came to South Carolina.
Retirement living.
For those of us 55 or older, that was the place to live. And at that point, the town of Bluffton was still 1 square mile. And town council realized that with the new development that was coming to their doorstep, they had an opportunity to either drive the development or be driven by it. And they decided to drive the development. And at that point, we started annexing in areas that were formerly not part of Bluffton into the town of Bluffton. That started the period of annexation, which today is the result of 54 square miles.
Wow. But the river's still the river.
The river is still the river, and it's still the place to be.
And they're still doing oysters.
We're still doing oysters, and they are fantastic. And if you haven't had them yet...
A May River oyster?
Yes, highly recommend.
What makes it different than any other kind of oyster?
It's the environment here, and they're spectacular.
And you still have alligators?
Yes, along with some other critters. But we do have alligators. We have armadillo. We have raccoon. We have fox. We have deer. Just to name a few.
Anything that scares you?
No, I'm not afraid of anything.
Not even the alligators?
No.
Why not?
Well, you know, they're just cute. I mean, I'm, you know.
You're describing an alligator as cute?
Yes, I am. I stay away from them. I don't get very close to them.
It's cute at a distance.
It's very
cute.
Okay,
double checking that.
That's right.
You're not just going to go, oh, look at the cute.
No, not at all.
Okay, just double checking. I want to make sure.
Of course, yeah.
The sanity level is with us.
That's right.
In terms of all the evolution of this town, going from like 700 residents to, what, 35,000?
That's about right.
Yeah. What's been the challenge?
Anytime you have development, especially at the level we've seen it, I mean, we're one of the fastest growing municipalities in the entire state. There's always pressure on things changing, especially with historic resources. Our historic district is still the 1 square mile. So,
with the buildings that survived the fire?
With the buildings that survived the fire, buildings that survived from the 1890s, 1900s, 1920s, 1940s. There's only so many of those. But people want to build here, live here, be here. So there's always development pressures of new development, new opportunities. So it's always a challenge.
Now, you're originally from Philadelphia.
I'm originally from Philadelphia.
How did you get here?
So I did my graduate work in, I have an MFA in architectural history from SCAD in Savannah.
We know SCAD.
And I always thought when I was in grad school, this would be a wonderful place to retire someday in the distant future. I was working in New York City and the pandemic hit. And I was one of the northerners that looked south with longing eyes and better weather and my job became available, and I said, well, I could go back to the Lowcountry and work before retirement. So that's what brought me back to the area.
And of course, I'll do my impression of the people welcoming you to Bluffton. Ready?
Okay.
You're not from around here now, are you?
No, I'm not.
But you are now.
I am now, yes.
What keeps you here?
You know, it's a combination of things. It's the weather. I mean, here we are in the beginning of October, and I'm still, you know, wearing summer wear. It's the people. It's the stories. It's the culture. It's all those things.
And you're staying?
I'm staying.
Wow. Cost of living?
Much less. What I paid for my New York apartment in Staten Island is now gets me a much more here.
So your dollar goes further?
A dollar goes farther.
And if worse comes to worse, you could hang out with the alligator.
That's right.
My thanks to Glenn, to Lisa Sulka, and to Scott McCartney. And my thanks to you for listening to this Ion Travel podcast from South Carolina. For more conversations with the world's leaders in travel, be sure to rate and review this podcast wherever you happen to listen to podcasts. And for all the breaking travel news, you know what to do. Just log on to petergreenberg.com.
The Ion Travel Podcast is produced by Amanda Morris and Anthony Protis-Chung. For more content from Peter Greenberg and the Ion Travel team, visit petergreenberg.com. Ion Travel is a production of CBS News Radio.
If you like Ion Travel with Peter Greenberg, you can listen early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music. Before you go, tell us about yourself by filling out a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
Hi, this is Jill Schlesinger, CBS News business analyst, certified financial planner, and host of the Money Watch podcast. This is the show where your money is not scary and it's not boring. It is a show that's all about you. It's your questions that make it possible for me to provide unconventional and entertaining insights on your money and maybe more importantly, on your life. I'm going to be your financial coach, someone who brings common sense and an insider's perspective on how to manage your money and your emotions. And I promise we are going to have a little bit of fun along the way. Have a question from retirement to career changes to college funding? Just send us an email at askjill@jillonmoney.com. Follow Money Watch wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen ad-free on the Amazon Music or Wondery app.
Survivor 46 is here, and so is On Fire, the only official Survivor podcast, and we have a twist this season. The winner of Survivor 45, Dee Valladares, will be joining us every week.
We're going behind the scenes of the biggest moments, the how and the why things happen, and the strategy and analysis you can only get from someone like me, a Survivor winner.
Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast, wherever you get your podcasts.